Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of The Tracklist. I'm Darren Jenkins.
And I'm Chris Saunders.
On this week's podcast, we are doing The Color of Money, directed by Martin Scorsese, written by Walter Tevis and Richard Price, starring Paul Newman, Tom Cruise, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, and music by Robbie Robertson, with a budget of 14.5, box office of 52.3. Fast Eddie teaches a cocky but immensely talented protege the ropes of pool hustling, which in turn inspires him to make an unlikely comeback. I hadn't watched this movie in a long time, and now I know why.
I never saw it. And I didn't realize that this was literally a, 30-year sequel of The Hustler?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which I haven't seen either. So now I kind of want to stop this podcast now. Let me go watch The Hustler, and then we can bring it back.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Technically, we probably should have did that.
It's funny because I've never seen the movie, but I've heard of it. And, like, I'm watching this movie, and, like, Paul Newman, pool player. This is like The Hustler. This is like Cindy thinking to myself.
Like, what the
hell? Yeah. I wasn't sure Paul Newman is it, but I was pretty sure. I was just going through the IMDb trivia, and it's like at one point in the film, Eddie comments that it has been 25 years since he last played in real life, 25 years since The Hustler. So that made me figure it out.
Yeah, they did a lot of alluding to The Hustler in this movie, either indirectly or directly. So,
well, apparently they wanted to get Jackie Gleason,
in this movie
in the sequel, because he played Fats in the original.
Minnesota Fats, yeah.
But he just didn't think it fit.
Yeah, I think he would have been pretty old by that point, too. Yeah. So that would have been kind of, I guess I could have done it, but, you know.
So have you seen The Hustler?
Oh, yeah.
So is that like a classic? Is that considered a classic?
Oh, yeah.
Since I've heard of it, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So now I'm a little upset now because I did not know that going in. And I wish I had watched it. Because like, you want to get those feels, right? You want to connect all the dots and stuff.
Yeah. I knew that it was, but I kind of spaced on that because I haven't seen Hustler in a while either.
Yeah, you just decided not to tell me, yeah. And so if that's considered a classic, what do you consider this one? Because this is kind of the opposite. So let me just go through. IMDb gives it 7 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes with the critics gives it 88%. The audience gives it 73%.
I feel like that's probably about right for the first time in a long time. Because as I'm watching this movie, I think because we've kind of been living with an older Tom Cruise for so long now that seeing this younger Tom Cruise, he is really an asshole in this movie.
Well, and, dude, yeah.
You know,
I mean, first of all, I would have assumed that this movie was before Top Gun and Risky Business. And just wasn't. Looking at how young he looks and the way he's acting.
Yep.
It's well before Risky Business and right around the same. Apparently, they were doing reshoots for Top Gun around the same time.
He's so young.
Yeah, man. And like, yeah, definitely agree with you. He's acting like a dick. I would say that he overplays it in this movie.
A little bit, yeah.
And then when I'm looking up these dates and everything for these movies, I scroll up and I see Tom Cruise was in Young Guns as a henchman who was shot off the roof, uncredited.
Oh, word?
Yeah, it was on IMDb. I assume it's true, but like, What? He was already hot by this point.
Well, he was prepping his stunt career, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. And then off the bat, like, this didn't feel like a Scorsese film to me. And then one of the IMDb trivia pieces was Martin Scorsese had said he mainly did this as an insistence on at the insistence of Paul Newman, that it wasn't a personal picture and he was more or less a hired gun on this. So if I get that feeling, I'm guessing that's why.
Right. Well, for me, it felt like he used his trademark, like these zoom in shots a lot, you know, like he did Born on the 4th of July. He does all these zoom ins and these pan shots and these swinging camera shots and stuff.
Well, there's definitely that one scene when Paul Newman, who plays Eddie, is in, where is he? Is he in a pool hall and the camera is just spinning around him and he's following it with, so he's turning with the camera, facing the camera. I was like,
yeah.
If that's Scorsese like, then yes, it's in there.
He did that in The Untouchables as well. So very much like he put his signature on it. Although I would say, to your point, yeah, early on in the movie, it felt different. It felt like this was like a different movie and not really a Scorsese product. We don't really get Scorsese until a little bit further in the movie. So,
and I mean, well, he's the narrator in the beginning of the film,
right?
I don't know if that was his decision. Like, if it's not a personal picture for him, is he not a pool fan? Is he not a, like, you know, this industry or whatever you want to call it, this way of life? And then why did he decide to be the one to do the voiceover? Like, that feels like a personal touch, right?
Yeah. I'm just trying to look back at some of his previous films. I mean, be honest, I don't want to jump ahead a little bit, but I did have a question that I wanted to pose to you since you play basketball. This has been labeled as a sports movie. And I'm got to ask you, is this a sports movie? Because if it is, it's totally outside of Scorsese's wheelhouse. And if it isn't, then why in the world would they call it? I mean, I guess they kind of call pool a sport, but
so, man, yeah, this was a whole debate about what was it? Was it poker? You know, when they had like the World Series of Poker on ESPN, and ESPN you associate with sports, and there was a whole debate about that. I don't know if it's because of the mental. I mean, at least pool has a physical aspect to it. Like, right. I don't know if it's like the mental stress you put yourself under when you're playing poker. And in that case, is that the same thing for? Oh, actually, sometimes they have spelling bees on ESPN, right? And is that the same thing for chess? So yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's like a lot of like there's mental capacity needed for pool too, right? Like angles, geometry. All that, like, you know,
I mean, he did Raging Bull. I mean, to me, that's a sports movie more than this, but
yeah, I don't want to offend anybody. I guess it just depends on your definition of sport, right?
Yeah, I don't want to offend any pool. I want any people come up to me with a pool cue trying to show me what,
like, you know. like Vincent's character in this movie, where he's doing like the martial arts stick fucking bow staff move. That was weird.
It was so Tom Cruise, though. I mean, that seriously, like, all that was missing was a dude from Scientology in the background.
There's a trivia piece about that. I don't remember the exact. I kind of passed it over. I didn't think it was important, but since you brought up Scientology, one of the pool halls that they used is supposed to be based in my God, why is this? Atlantic City.
Yep.
But a lot of the pool halls they use were in Chicago. And I think one of them that they use still exists, well, as of 2015, and is across the street from the Church of Scientology.
Nice.
So of which, Yeah, of which Tom Cruise is quite involved in.
Well, I mean, we won't go down that road, but apparently he's split from the church. So apparently, so we'll see. Which is kind of too little, too late, but whatever.
But you did set the tone, saying you understand why you didn't watch this movie. So before we get into any more bashing,
yep,
and didn't know that he did win for this, but Paul Newman, I love him in this movie. Absolutely, yeah, love him in this movie.
He's really good in this movie. Yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen a lot of films with him. The Sting is one that I own and that I really like. Yeah. But you know, he's good in that too. But like, I really liked him in this. I don't know if I would say this is my favorite film by him.
Well, that's a tough question. That's a good question. We may have to revisit that at the end of this podcast.
I got it. Oh, Cool Hand Luke. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Still, I still would say this might be my favorite performance of his.
Hustler. Well, since you haven't seen Hustler, I would add Hustler as probably one of my favorite. Butch and Sundance is probably like literally just right there. And for a lot of people who probably haven't even watched this movie, but it's Towering Inferno. I mean, I gotta add him to an action movie, and he was good in that.
Damn, this guy goes back though, man. He goes back to the '50s, the '40s, 1949 TV series, and the Aldrich family. I thought it was the Addams family, Aldrich family. So I probably don't have enough basis to make that comment, but it is like his best performance. But the best performance I've seen him in, I might say, is this film.
I tell you what, the '80s, well, he was crushing in the '80s. I mean, he was. The Verdict, which is really good, Color of Money, Glass Menagerie, Fat Man and Little Boy, which is basically about the atomic tests, and Blaze was actually pretty decent.
I'm just thinking, you said Fat Man and Little Boy. I'm just thinking Fat Man and a Little. Sure, what was that? Chris Farley?
Oh, God.
Black Sheep.
Black Sheep, yeah.
Sorry, I digress. Yeah, so really loved. I mean, you know, I talk about subtlety all the time. I think he might be a master of it, if not in his whole career, in this film. You see that with like the manipulating he does earlier in the film to kind of figure out Vincent and obviously guide him in the direction he wants. So yeah, really like that. But his mind games definitely make me anxious as fuck in this movie.
Yeah, he's he really, like, this is kind of like I could have seen him in Ocean's 11. Mm-hmm. Like, he had a level of manipulation that was pretty much on that level where, I mean, you just knew everything he said was true from a certain point of view, but you know, but he had ulterior motives all, you know, throughout most of this early part of this movie.
Yeah, that's an apt point there. The Ocean's 11 part. I'm like, I wish that had a bigger soundtrack, because I want to do that. Yeah. And that'll be our final question.
Yeah, that would be, yeah.
Could Paul Newman be in this film, and what role would he make it better?
That actually might have to add him. Might have to add him.
Ooh, I don't know. I did have a question, though. Why the fuck is this girl half naked or naked in this movie all the time?
Laying in a bed with her underwear. Well,
like, I can see where Vincent's coming from when he's getting pissed at her, man. She just like, men walk into the hotel room, she just got her top off and the bed, just things half naked. I'm like, put some clothes on, woman.
Yeah, she was a handful. And I had a question about this too, and maybe I'll save it till later. No, I'll save it till later. Never mind. Carry on. Yeah, she spent way too much time, without her clothes on. And I'm not sure if it was needed. Like, I'm not sure, like, what the, like, how Scorsese justified that situation. I'm like,
because, like, obviously Vincent's a jealous guy.
Very.
Eddie kind of implants that thought in his head, like she's on her way out, like she's bored. But you get that enough with him implanting that thought, inception, and then also like when they're at the pool hall and he's like grabbing her ass and stuff, right? Like,
right.
I get the point already. Like having her, I mean, the whole point of that was like we're business people. This is part of the business, like to act. But like when they're by themselves in the hotel room, you don't need to do that. So,
right.
I'm just trying to figure out if this, we don't get a lot of backstory on Carmen or Vincent.
Yeah. We don't know much about them at all. They just show up and, you know.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to figure out, okay, is she a slut or is she just a exhibitionist or she's just, I don't know. Like I don't have enough information. So that's probably what throws me off.
Well, which brings to another question then. Why haven't we seen a third piece of this puzzle with a follow-up to this movie with Tom Cruise being the older one and taking on a mentor or a mentee?
I mean, it's not too late.
Yeah.
Let's see. We got The Hustler, The Color of Money. I don't know what the sequel is. Although I think the first two were actually books, right?
Yeah, they were.
So maybe they just don't have any source material to run off of, but you know.
That never stopped Hollywood.
Yeah, but you know what? Like, they tend to remake films as opposed to, you know, create something, I hate to say this, but completely creative and new, right? These days. So I don't know. I don't know if they have it in them.
That's
so that was, yeah. That was one thing that bothered me, was like the lack of backstory. And we've talked about this with other films, and that clearly makes this film about Eddie, not, even though Tom Cruise is the young up and comer, he's not the star. Paul Newman's the star.
Right. Yeah. Which is, like as I'm watching the movie, that was actually my question, like almost from the beginning, like why this guy wasn't playing more, you know? I mean, but then, like, I guess that comes into, that's where we should have watched The Hustler first to kind of.
I just don't know if there was something at the end of that film, because he talks about
someone
putting, I don't know, the voodoo on him or something. And I don't know if that was just in between movies or it actually happened in The Hustler. So now I have to go back.
Well, now it gives you something to do on the weekend.
Yeah, because I have all the time in the world. yeah, so that's a very, I feel like I'm missing something. I'm not prepared for this podcast.
The one thing I'll say about this movie is that it was created, and maybe this is the book's doing, where you technically should watch The Hustler, but you don't have to watch The Hustler. Like they gave you the story that you, in a way that if you didn't see it, you weren't necessarily missing like a major piece of the puzzle. But if you are like us who ask questions, then yeah, you might want to see The Hustler. So.
Yeah. This is only because, you know, if this was someone who was a teenager in 1987, whenever this was made, like you'd probably be none the wiser.
Right.
But like, yeah, I'm 40. It's the 2020s. And I had heard of The Hustler and like, kind of put the piece together, but then, yeah, now we're researching, we're asking questions. So, yeah, listen, that's not going to affect, like, the watchability of this film. It's just, for me, it's a personal thing. I'm beating myself up about it. But so yeah, I mean, we don't have a, that's who we should have on the show, professional pool player we should have on the show.
Ooh, that would be cool.
Because we don't have like that eye right now.
Right.
From my perspective, like the first hustle was believable, where, you know, you lose a little bit and then raise the stakes and then like then you take them out. But then the second one, when Vincent puts on the nerdy glasses and he's like really overplaying it, like, I don't know, man. I don't know what's going on. I was like, oh my God. That's like Billy Hoyle. That's like Billy Hoyle dressing up like a scrub and White Man Can't Jump. here's a final, I'm going to add a final question. No.
Okay.
Is White Man Can't Jump the Hustler or Color of Money of the, actually, that basketball. Was that, yeah, for basketball. Nobody's teaching. There's no teacher-student relationship in that one.
No, but I think it might have. It kind of mimics that the grifter life, you know.
Yeah. Speaking of the grifter life, that kind of leads in. Kind of leads to my point about the soundtrack, which is some of the songs kind of felt like, okay, yeah, you go into a pool hall, like this is definitely what you're hearing.
Right.
I there's some in particular more than others. I can still hear like, you know, Eric Clapton and Mark Knopfler, but like the blues, more of the blues stuff.
Right.
I'll be like, oh yeah, you walk into a pool hall, and they got some blues playing, a bunch of grifters, like, yeah.
Very trying to
hustle each other. Yeah.
Which is weird. You know, I mean, I don't know how, like, if we want to dive into the music, but there was a Phil Collins tune in there, and it's not on the soundtrack, which is weird.
Well, it's on the IMDb list of soundtrack, and another one I found.
Hmm.
I don't know about the official. But again, like, you know, we've talked about, especially movies from probably the 80s and 90s, where you would buy the soundtrack, they wouldn't put every single song that played in the film.
Yeah.
They would just put the ones that are like, I don't know, that they think you would like. But this one also does another thing from like older soundtracks is they include some of the scoring in there as well.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Like I think about like a soundtrack that I grew up with that I love from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Like you have some of the scores and they're in between the selected songs, the super music supervised songs.
There's some good stuff on this soundtrack. I was like, I like the way they used the music. Like it was almost, it was there, but it wasn't. You know what I mean? Like,
I think this
is kind of like a music the second movie we've done where they've. It was kind of like a really good way they used the music.
Well, it wasn't the star, right?
Right.
We're not talking about a biopic where the music is like up front and center. And we're not talking about even like Into the Spider-Verse where you can really hear the music and it really pushes the action. Right. This is like a lot of this, most of this, like I'm looking at what they've listed on IMDb. Yeah. I don't remember 75% of these songs playing. So it was a lot of background stuff at the pool halls, at bars, just in the background.
Yeah. Doing stuff in bars are great because it's the best way. It's a great way for you to add music to the movie without it being too overwhelming. It can just be this thing in the background that kind of adds accent, you know? So I feel like it's almost like in this case, it's, the difference between a track list and the soundtrack, which I think in some degrees is different. You know what I mean?
I like it. Do you see how we did that, folks? How we pulled the name of the podcast in there? Because we are actually more interested in the track list, the actual songs that show up, like appear in the movie versus the official soundtrack. So,
right.
Well done, sir. Well done.
Thank you very much. I mean, I'll drop the mic later. Doo-doo-doo. God, I'm on fire.
I wish you were. So I forgot to mention, like, when they when he's in the glasses and like looking really nerdy, they really overdid it. I don't know if that's from like the book or something or some source material. He also like scratches the ball, the cue ball, off the table. Like something you like wouldn't go into a pool hall and bet money. Like you wouldn't do that. Like that's a tell for me. That's like, yeah, clearly this guy is about to come back and kick my ass. Right. So I do have my gripes with the way they executed some of this.
Yeah. I mean,
it's kind of like the fucking Casino Royale with the final hand in the Texas Hold'em match, just so over the top. Like,
yeah, like,
what was it? It was like a straight flush, royal flush, four of a kind, all in one hand. Like, oh, go fuck yourself. Anyway,
yeah, it's a little, yeah. I mean, I don't know how much you've gone into like pool halls where you've like where you've gotten stuff like that going on. I've been to one or two places. I actually dated a girl who was a professional pool player, and without me knowing at the time, and she went in there and hustled these four dudes like while we were on a date, and I was just like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, she was hitting stuff like it was like this move, like, you like, get the fuck out of here.
Well, that was it. Apparently, all but one shot Tom Cruise actually did in this movie.
Of course he did. Because even back then, he was doing his own stunts.
I mean, like, that's probably the main reason I would become an actor, is just to learn all of these superfluous, like, skills into pool, darts, martial arts, like, all this stuff that you, like, you learn and prep for each film, and, like, clearly he got pretty good at it. That's reason enough to become an actor.
Yeah. Yeah. You can ride a horse, shoot basketball, fly a jet plane, climb a mountain. I'm like, fuck.
Well, I'm not going to climb the mountain or fly a jet plane. Tom Cruise can have all that. Speaking of which, I found this in the trivia. So I'm going to just say this verbatim. Creators of an up-and-coming software company were looking for a name for their revolutionary video game. They got it from the scene in which Tom Cruise walks into the pool hall and is asked what's in the case and that he's carrying. Do you remember what his answer is?
No.
Doom. They got the name of that game from this movie.
Oh, good gravy.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, okay. That's cool. Anyway.
I got a question for you. Well,
go for it.
I'm just kind of moving along with the film here. Actually, this is just a general question. What the fuck is up with Tom Cruise's Bruce Lee sounds in this movie? Right? Like, if we had some background, character backgrounds here, like, we might understand that shit. Like, maybe he takes martial arts. Like, maybe he is, or he's a big Bruce Lee fan, but we have nothing to work off of. So it's just out of the blue. The whole, the Bruce Lee sounds, the spinning of the cue stick and all. Yeah,
it was not I was so annoyed by him, to be honest, in that scene. Like, I forgot for a second that I was watching a movie, and I almost turned it off because I thought it was a TV show. I was like, fuck that. Let's see what else is on. Oh, wait, I got to watch this shit. That was so over the top. But it also, I was like, all right, I mean, he looks like he's 13, so whatever.
It's, I'm thinking now, like, okay, I get it, right? Like, Eddie is this seasoned pool shark.
Right.
Vincent's this young hotshot, and they maybe went over the top to, like, make it more believable that Eddie's going to pull him, like, you know, straighten him out, focus him, like reel him in.
Yeah.
So they're opposite ends of the spectrum, but like still, that was definitely a creative choice by Tom Cruise to like do that kind of stuff. I don't think he was directed to do
that. Yeah, no, this is, I feel like that was right up there with him jumping on Oprah's couch, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I was watching this movie and like, I'm just like, so this motherfucker was just always like that. I thought like it just, he became crazy one day, but
he was, that was just me. I you know what though? I kind of get it, because if you think about it, right, back when he first broke into the industry, which was young, he probably was this good looking little kid with all this energy, just like this boundless energy. And they're like, yeah, we want this dude. I mean, that makes you stand out in an audition like that. So,
yeah. Well, maybe this is hindsight. Maybe back in 1987, I would have enjoyed this, but.
Or maybe he has ADHD. I don't know.
Oh, he definitely does. You know what popped in my head while I'm watching this? How did they get to all these pool halls? How'd they find them in the 80s without Google Maps?
Or MapQuest.
Or not. They didn't even know MapQuest in the 80s.
I said no. I said
Oh, I was going to say the same thing. At least MapQuest.
Well, because they MapQuest, right?
Yeah, but right, the first one they go to like is now like a storage facility or like some laundry room, right?
Right.
And they start cracking on.
I mean, that's how long he's been out of. Yeah, it was kind of. I mean, that's an improbability in a lot of ways, right? I mean, how long is he said 25 years it's been since he. Mm-hmm. So, how many places you know are going to be open for like? I mean. I was looking at pictures of some of the bars that you played in, like, and it's not been 25 years, and a bunch of those are closed.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's been 13.
Yeah, so.
Halfway there. I mean, I don't know. I can't remember who you mentioned in the cast list, but I was very surprised by a couple folks.
Oh yeah, there were. I didn't mention everybody because I know there are a bunch of like people that are in this movie that deserve to be recognized because they are like legends of their own. So,
I mean, John Turturro,
yeah,
you mentioned, but like, yeah. I mean, I think he's. I don't know if he's underrated. He should, or I don't even know if he's got a Lifetime Achievement Award yet, but he should.
Who's that?
John Turturro.
I don't think so. He should.
That dude.
I mean, he's a, like, at the very least, he should be recognized as one of the greatest New York actors. Mm. I mean, if you think of New York, you think of him for sure.
It's just like, he's just like not a lead guy, but the talent is,
yeah,
it's ridiculous.
Yeah. He's like, a great character actor.
Yeah. He can do anything. And then I used to recognize one guy, Bill Cobbs, because one of my favorite movies is Demolition Man. He's in that.
Oh,
one.
Yeah.
And then like Bruce A. Young. I don't know if you ever watched The Sentinel in the 90s.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So Bruce A. Young is in that one. I don't know if he plays a partner or the chief or whatever of the main character.
Yeah.
He's in that. Iggy Pop is in this movie.
Like Iggy Pop pops up into like these like regular throughout the 80s in different movies.
Yeah, well, I don't think he really did much.
He's kind of like Flea. Flea does that as well.
Flea. But most importantly, Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah, I mean, he was so young.
Yeah, I mean, I knew he was a fucking hustler from the get. So
he was good in that moment he was on the screen too, boy.
Yeah. So Eddie, if I saw it, Eddie should have seen it.
So are you a hustler? Are you a hustler? Are you a hustler?
But yeah, he's great in this role. Like, I think that's even before. Is it before Bloodsport? Right, Bloodsport's 1990.
Yeah, he's definitely before
before Bloodsport. Yeah, he looks a lot younger in this. Yeah, so I was like, oh snap, Forrest, Ghost Dog.
Ghost Dog. Oh yeah.
So shout out to Forrest because I want to.
Oh yeah.
And then the scene after that, so like he hustles Eddie. And Eddie has like a breakdown. He's like, I should have fucking seen that shit. And he's like, and then he like he quits on Vincent and Carmen. That scene in the stairwell, I actually really like that scene.
Oh yeah. That was a good scene.
Where he's like, he's just essentially abandoning them. They're like, what are you fucking talking about? Like, he's like, I've taught you everything. Like that display I just put on, getting my ass kicked. That's the last lesson, right? Which I assume is don't underestimate anybody. And then he leaves him, and I really like that scene.
Yeah, that was a good scene, and it really set the stage for what was coming next.
I do have to rewind because there's a scene before that where Vincent plays this guy Grady, who's supposed to like, be the best pool player in wherever, and his he lets his ego get the best of him instead of like tanking the whole. All the games, he starts coming back and playing well. And there's actually a, I think, around when he's almost about to blow it, there's a guitar plays in the background, and I immediately thought like Lethal Weapon. We talked about this. I automatically was like, oh shit, yeah. So that was before the Forest Whitaker scene, but I want to mention it because we do have some Eric Clapton in the soundtrack. So and he did that. He was. Did was part a partner on the score for Lethal Weapon. And this leads me to my next episode of So Hold Up. So Eddie ditches Vincent and Carmen and then he goes swimming and gets his eyes tested.
Was it in that specific order? I mean,
Yeah, he swam and then he got his eyes tested. And then we go into this like Rocky training montage where he's like,
da-da-da-da, with his pool cue. I'm just...
where he's like playing a bunch of people in pool. He even goes to like this old folks home, I think. He beats this old lady.
That's weird. That was a little weird.
I mean, he goes, starts from the beginning, right? Builds himself back up. I get it. But I don't see where the swimming and the eye test come into play.
That was, I mean, I get what they were trying to do there. Thus my original question, is
Is this
this
a
a sports
sport?
movie?
Oh, he had to swim some laps to get to prepare for the pool table.
Oh
So,
my
oh,
God.
I get it. Swimming in a pool, playing pool. I see what they
Here
did
you
there.
go.
I see what they done did there.
He's
Okay.
doing pool to improve on pool. Then he got in the car pool.
Oh God. Just habitual line stepper,
That's right.
Darren. Yeah. So I mean, it's interesting how this film is put together, where you have the like we said, like the veteran pool shark taking on the young gun, teaching him. And then, like, if this was Karate Kid, right? That's Mr. Miyagi and whatever. He would just train him, and he would win this tournament. What they did here is he trains him, he bounces, and then,
And tries to kick his ass.
yeah. So that I found that interesting.
Oh, that would have been a really good thing for Karate Kid. Mr. Miyagi coming back and beating Daniel's ass.
Wax on, I wax your ass. So I like how they did that. And then so yeah, they all essentially meet up in Atlantic City for this tournament. There was a quote. I'm gonna put this in conjunction with one of my favorite quotes. Earlier in the film, Vincent asks Eddie, like, you religious? And he responds, me. I get high on the man upstairs.
Oh yeah.
And I only bring that up now because when he gets to Atlantic City and like walks into the tournament space, do you hear the organ playing?
Mm-mm.
They do this bird's eye view of the space with all the pool tables and like the seats on the side. And then they're playing an organ. And I'm just like, oh, wow, they really brought back the church theme in this one, huh? Like, this is his church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that as well. It was, it's kind of religious. It's a religious awakening for him, I guess, in a lot of ways. Come back
you think about redemption, like a big theme in the Bible, redemption and all that stuff. So, like, that's, I don't know if that really is redemption for him, but it's his comeback, you know? I don't know if that was intentional, Scorsese, but. And I really like how they didn't face off in the final, like that would have been predictable.
Right.
But when they do face off, yeah, I didn't recognize at the time that he was hustling him, but then I was like, I did recognize at the time, there was like some of the shots he missed that Vincent missed in the game. I was like, dude, like you've been hitting shots 10 times harder than that. And it turns out he had the hustle. Well, not really the hustle. He was just, he bet against himself, which is interesting. Like we don't get told like what the payout for this tournament is. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I mean, I get it. The ultimate thing is to try to get as much money as possible, but I don't know if I could bet against myself.
I don't know. At this stage, like, right, you're thinking, okay, Eddie was teaching him how to like stay under the radar so that people don't have him, they don't target him or they don't avoid him when they want to play. But like at this stage, you've already kind of run through Atlantic City.
Yeah, they kind of know who you are by that point, right?
Yeah. So I don't know. As a competitor myself, I would not have done that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know I wouldn't have done it.
It's like he flip-flopped, right? Like all he wanted to do in the beginning was win, which I guess is the point. And then he finally understood Eddie's lessons, but like, wrong time, bro.
Yeah, he could have done that earlier. Hello.
Yeah.
Not when all the money's on the line. So there you go.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But like, I get it like in poker, bringing it back to poker, like a lot of these like, guys that play in tournaments that are like professional poker players, they'll tell you like the money is in the home, like the cash game. It's not in the tournaments. Right.
Right.
So I don't know if that's like a apt parallel to make, but.
Well, I can understand the, sometimes you have to play hurt or lame in order to make people kind of, it's kind of, I mean, basketball, they do it all the time. How many times have a basketball player pretend like, oh, my ankle's not feeling so good today, but I'm going to go and put up 50 on you?
Yeah, I've seen tennis players do that shit too. It's annoying. Mm-hmm. But actually, I don't know if this is like we're getting towards the end of the film here, but I don't know if you want to start talking about, you know, I have a what the fuck moment that I want to talk about and like quotes or what, you know?
Yeah, go for it. Let's dive on into the questions.
I mean, So my minor what the fuck moments are Tom Cruise's accent and his hair. But my major one that I want to talk about is we don't get to see the final game.
Yeah, that was my big what the fuck moment too. I was like, don't freeze. Freeze. It was like the 80s cop out of like, we don't have an ending.
I'm back. Yeah. Man. What the?
So brings, I mean, that kind of justifies my question up front, which was, where's the third one?
You know what that reminds me of? Rocky 2.
Oh.
The end of Rocky 2 when they're just sparring. Yeah. But at least in like, well, they don't actually tell us who wins that either in Rocky 3. But right. they replay that scene in Rocky III and they freeze, and then like it's just Rocky with a bruised eye getting home after that. But that's why we needed a sequel, just to see who's I don't know, who's a little light in the wallet.
Yeah, I mean that's a coward's way out, man. You got to come up with the ending.
Anyway, so that was my what the fuck. You got any?
I think that was really, I mean, that, oh, you kind of mentioned this already, but my what the fuck moment was when Newman walks in on her laying in the bed with nothing but her underwear on. I'm just like, what? And she's like, what? I'm not naked. Yeah, I'm like, girl, seriously?
I just didn't understand that whole thing. And then, like, he's like, don't play games with me. Like, I'm your, like, business partner. And she's like, don't flatter yourself. Like, then why are you half naked when the guy busts in there? Anyway.
I had a question, though. So, and maybe this kind of segues into our who could have been in this movie thing. But because Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, she was kind of like the it girl for a lot of movies in the 80s. But then she just disappears at some point. And my question is, did Julia Roberts come by and kick her in the head off the corner, kick her off the corner? Because I feel like Julia Roberts could have been in this movie easily.
Well, based on a Pretty Woman, I suppose, yeah.
Feels like this was like written for her, and she, or because I mean, there's a lot of Julia in a lot of these scenes.
I mean, it's a little grittier than I'd be used to with her.
What are you talking about? Pretty Woman's not gritty,
but even pretty, it's really not. I know she's supposed to be a prostitute, but like, it's not gritty.
Pelican and Brief, like, is not gritty enough for you.
No. Well, we did one on my best friend's wedding. Was like, I was where I was like, oh shit, this is pretty fucking raw for her.
Yeah.
All right. I forget there was another one. Maybe Aaron Brockovich. But yeah. So
yeah.
I don't know, man.
She looks like, I mean, I feel like she stole Mary Elizabeth's career. She like basically just came and said, I got it, and just moved her off the spot and said, I got it. Don't worry about it.
Well, that's what I'm doing right now. So actually, ooh, you might be right, because this movie is this movie 1987 exactly?
I think so.
86. Okay, this movie is 1986, mm-hmm. And Julia Roberts' first credit is 1987. And Mystic Pizza was 1988.
Mm-hmm.
Steel Magnolias 89, Pretty Woman 90. I mean, Flatliners, Sleeping with the Enemy, Hook.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she was Tinkerbell, Pelican Brief. Like, yeah, so she, and then this movie was 86. Let's see what happens after 86 for this woman. Oof, you might be right, my friend. She started in 82. She had Color of Money, Slam Dance, The January Man. She was in The Abyss in 89.
Hmm.
And Robin Hood 91, one of my favorite movies of all time. Prince of Thieves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there's like not a lot of recognizable stuff. To me, Perfect Storm in 2000, that's a big jump. Yeah, man, that's a pertinent question to ask, my friend.
Wow, that's just, well, there you go. It's sad because, you know, she's a decent actress. She's not. Yeah, she was a decent actress.
I mean, listen, she's good in this.
Yeah, she was very good.
It's just the character itself was like strange. It wasn't her performance. Her performance was fine.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't know. Well, I'll give you another what the fuck.
Hmm.
The song Werewolves in London. Have you listened to the lyrics to that shit?
No.
I don't know why I didn't say this. First of all, what the fuck? Because it has absolutely nothing to do with the movie. And two, the fucking lyrics. I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain. He was looking for the place called Li Ho Fuchs for to get a big dish of beef chow mein.
What?
I'm not even going to say anymore. It's
I don't understand what that means.
Nope. Werewolves. And then the chorus is, ooh, werewolves in London. Like, anyway, that to me is, that deserves a what the fuck to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's, it's a great song. It's not appropriate for anything. Warren Zevon.
Yeah, I don't know who that is either. And then yeah. I had the misfortune of watching the music video for it as well, which is, the guy looks like such a douche. Anyway.
Well, just so you understand, two of his other songs, one was called Lawyers, Guns, and Money, and the other one was called Roland the Headless. So
were those for Young Guns and...
I have no idea. Like
Sleepy Hollow?
His third album, Excitable Boy, which is well known. I had never heard of this dude.
Yeah, we don't have to talk about him anymore.
you're just giving them time.
I don't. Yeah.
Yeah, his songs are hilarious. My shit's fucked up.
Any? Do you have any favorite quotes?
Yeah, I had one, which. When Eddie is talking to Bonehead inside the car, and he says, to win, you got to have brains and you got to have balls. You got too much of one and not enough of the other.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was the quote that sums up the whole movie, basically.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, probably.
Mm.
I mean, I liked the one from the narration to open up the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this is probably something similar to this was said in Rounders. But for some players, luck itself is an art.
Oh, that's a good one, too. Yeah.
But my all-time favorite is Carmen. While in that one scene where he's playing Grady and he's like about to ruin the... He's supposed to like lose all the matches, but he's like... playing well, she says, you ruin one more game, you're gonna be humping your fist for a long time. Humping your fist.
All right. Okay. That's
possibly the best writing in a film I've ever heard.
Yeah, she should have, maybe whoever wrote that should have, they should have an Oscar category for just best lines in a movie.
Perhaps, yes. And then, well, it always goes back to my... See, you said that, and immediately what pops in my head is, we talked about this with Bodyguard. I've been watching you from across the room all night. Well, go back over there. Keep watching. Top winner, number one, history of film.
All time.
So if you ready for the questions?
Are you ready to questions? Yeah, let's do that.
So I actually thought we could go back to some of our original questions for this one, because I think our original question, could Tom Hanks be in this film? In what role, and would he make it better?
Wow. Well, Tom Hanks could be in this movie two ways.
Yes, he can.
The older Tom Hanks could be Eddie.
Mm-hmm.
The younger Tom Hanks could be whatever his name was.
Vincent,
yeah. I would like him better as Eddie, probably, because I don't know. I mean, like, he's got some comical edge to him, his younger self, but there's a true science to being the dick on screen. And I don't know
thing Tom Hanks can do.
Oh, that's the one thing that Cruise can do. He can be Dick.
I agree. Essentially, yes, I agree. He could have played both.
Mm.
As usual, a different film.
Mm.
I think it's but I don't think he would be better than.
No.
He could do Eddie, but I don't think he would be better than Paul Newman. Paul Newman is absolutely amazing in this film.
Yeah.
And they were both
in the same. They were both in. They were in the movie together. What's the movie? Road to Perdition.
Oh yeah. Okay. I don't know. I'm trying to force Tom Hanks, younger Tom Hanks, into the Vincent role.
Mm.
I'm trying to imagine, like it would be more playful. He'd be less of a dick and just more of a slacker.
Yeah.
And I think that could still work. Because I mean, maybe that was the point, but I really, really didn't like. I thought Cruise really overplayed, and I didn't really like him in this film. So. I don't know. I'm trying to force Tom Hanks in there. But he could play both roles, absolutely. If it's better, that's another question.
Yeah, I don't know if it'd be better. I think it would be good, very good. But, I mean, Newman at his this was his, like one of his better films. Yeah.
So. And sometimes we ask the question of, like, who else could be better than this role? Because we find other casting information, like, oh, these people were considered. I didn't find any of that.
Neither.
So I don't know if that was just, well, because Paul Newman, I guess, came to Scorsese for this, so it was his film. But you could have other people cast possibly for Vincent and Carmen. So I don't know. Anyway, I didn't find that. Okay. Since we did the original OG actor question, let's do the OG music question. Could Tears in Heaven be in the soundtrack, and in what scene, and would it make it better?
It definitely could be in the movie. I mean, that's a hard question because I think I wouldn't want to put it in the movie as like, because normally we do it. Sometimes it's tongue in cheek. I don't want to do that with this moment, because I think because Clapton's already on the soundtrack, and I don't think it would make sense for him to do one song that's tongue in cheek and one that's not. You know, so I mean, I don't know. Maybe in the background, like when he's dancing with his girlfriend. I don't know. I don't know. That's a good question, but I don't know.
There's so much background music in this. Maybe it could work. I said no.
Mm.
But we've already got Clapton in here. And now I'm thinking maybe. The question should be rephrased.
Oh.
Because I'm a huge fan of Tears in Heaven, so that's really why we started asking this question. It was more to be tongue in cheek, but maybe the question should be: could Eric Clapton have a song? Could one of Eric Clapton's songs be in this soundtrack? Just to broaden it, and like we have more things to.
That's not a bad idea. I think that would be. That would be cool to kind of see what other Clapton works might fit. Like, are we better at music composition than or music scoring?
Yeah.
So with that being said, did you have a song in mind?
I didn't. I thought about that question while we were talking about the film.
I think Layla could be in this.
Which one? The original or the acoustic version?
The acoustic version.
I mean, are you saying Carmen is Layla in this situation, and Eddie is Eric Clapton, and Vincent is George Harrison?
Well, I mean, it's either that or I shot the sheriff. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I know a lot of Eric Clapton stuff. Something in Ashtrays, or Bell Bottom Blues would probably fit in here.
How about anyway. Cocaine?
Well, that for Totoro's character, yeah.
Yeah.
That was Crossroads. My bad. Yeah, so for the next one, I'll have a song for the movie, an Eric Clapton song for the movie. But in the meantime, what's your favorite song in the soundtrack, and which one do you think encompasses the story?
I mean, my favorite song that's in the soundtrack is One More Night, Phil Collins, which is why I called it out. I was a little annoyed for a second there. But the one that I think probably fits the movie, that's a good question.
I had to look at lyrics to answer this one, so.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I think actually one that makes sense for the movie is the Clapton song, and it's in the way that you use it.
They do play it twice. I think it's at the same pool hall.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Did I look at that? I think I did. It's in the way that you use it. I must have looked at those lyrics. It comes and goes. It's the way that you use it. Yeah. So what I thought about those lyrics were, and I'm not sure if this was actually written for this movie, because it talks about Eric Clapton collaborating with the composer, who's a previous band artist. I forget the name.
Robbie Robertson.
Yeah. Did they work together? I don't think they were in a band together, but in the way that you use it, it comes and goes, you know. So like your skill, right, as a pool player, it comes and goes, where like Eddie talks about that, like sometimes the balls don't roll for you. It's in the way you use it, you don't know. Feelings will show, you don't ever abuse it, don't let it go. I mean, you're weak, nobody's weak until somebody's strong. You could make it match up to the storyline. So again, that's why I'm not sure if it was written for this film.
Well, the fact that Robbie Robertson and him both are credited as songwriters on the song, I feel like, yeah, it's probably because of this movie.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, Robbie Robertson was part of the band. There you go.
Yeah, the band, yeah.
So I really liked Standing on the Edge of Love, B.B. King. But again, I was talking about how blues really fit into this atmosphere better than some of the other music, and it's B.B. King. And for encompassing, who owns this place? Don Henley? Of the Eagles. And I don't know. Well, he's got parts of the song. Again, I'm not sure if this was written for the movie too, but he's got part of the song's called, it says push, pull, push, pull, push, pull, right? The movement of the cue. I mean, you know, there ain't no end to a man's desire to steal your water, steal your fire, snakes in the garden, apples on the tree. All this looks easy. None of this is free. You might get lucky. Got the world to win, need a little failure to thicken your skin. That's just a little more literal. Everybody's talking, they promise you the moon, it's made on paper, but you find out pretty soon. To me, like, that kind of talks about this guy's desire to be the best.
Yep.
snakes in the garden, apples on the tree. It was the whole Adam and Eve thing and being tempted by evil or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then need a little favor to thicken your skin, which is what Eddie kind of preaches, like to like throw games to win more money in the end. And you have to just lose to learn from losing. And all this kind of, I don't know, to me, it kind of fit in. Monkey see, monkey do. You're watching him and he's watching you. I feel like that's the relationship of Eddie and Vincent right there. He's teaching him, he's watching him, but he's also, Vincent's also watching Eddie and learning all that stuff, you know. I kind of put those pieces together and thought that that was the best song for that question.
Okay. You're wrong, but okay. No.
I'm very never wrong.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, final questions. What did you rate the film and soundtrack, track list?
You know, I just don't know if I would watch this movie again. And if I did, it would really just be for Paul Newman. That being said, I guess I'm not a huge Paul fan, so that doesn't hold interest for me either. And like I said, Tom Cruise is kind of overdoes it. So, and if you want a little more trivia, did you know that this is the only Scorsese film that Robert Ebert did not review favorably? It got two thumbs down for Ebert and Siskel. So I guess I'm with them on that.
Oh, so thumbs down, or what number are we looking at?
Six.
Wow.
It's just, the only thing that keeps it up is Paul Newman for me.
Okay. Yeah, to be honest, right almost from the beginning, I didn't enjoy it. Like, I didn't hate it, but I also was the same as you. Like, Tom Cruise was just too much. It was too much over-the-top stuff. And Newman, like, I really wish he had a better film to be in, because he was really good in it. I'd probably give it a 6.5. And the only reason why I'm giving it the half point is because it was like, because there were some other good characters, John Turturro and Forrest Whitaker, who were in it.
But I feel like I like this movie more than you, and you giving it a 6, you giving it higher than me.
Yeah, I don't know. That's how it works, man. It's the mysteries of life, my friend. The mysteries of life.
We probably should have prefaced the whole episode with this, but we did select this film from a list that we saw online of top soundtracks, top 50 yeah. soundtracks, and this was in there.
Uprocks.com.
Does this fall into top 50?
No.
I don't think so.
No. This is top 75, maybe. I just don't think there's enough meat on the bone for it to be considered.
Yeah. Well, that's right. We talk about a film like Forrest Gump, which had like 35 songs on it. Like, that almost, it's all a lot of great songs, but almost seems like overkill.
Yeah.
Versus like a Big Chill, which has like 12, maybe 14.
I think a nice sweet spot is anywhere between 10 and 15 songs, right? Because anything else after that is like weird. It's like too much. Then it's a music video.
Yeah, so.
With the exception of Forrest Gump, probably.
I mean, we've done other movies with very substantial, Goodfellas, very substantial track lists. Yeah. So, yeah.
I feel like the last movie we did, which was the Super Mario Brothers, was perfect when it comes to the soundtrack.
Yes, and it was a different beast, right? Because a lot of the music, other music in there was from the game.
Right.
And you had to leave space for that. So if you just did too many, pulled in too many other songs, you lose that. You lose the magic. So, but yeah.
So Hollywood, if you're looking for the template, there it is. There it is. Two Italian brothers in overalls. All right. Well, what's up, man? You got your contest cooking still? And
yeah, let's get a live update. I did make the quarterfinals, which is a group, another group stage. So there's a bunch of other groups, but I am currently sixth out of eight people in my group. So
for the opening act.
But we're only 27 hours into the quarterfinals. It's gonna be, I don't know, 8 to 9 more days. But yeah, this is probably the biggest thing I've ever done. So looking for everyone's help. I don't know if I could just do theopeningact.com/2023/Chris-Saunders. Yeah, type all that in. That's where you can vote for me. If I do win this opening act contest, I'll be performing on October 14th at the Prudential Center in front of tens of thousands of people. And right now, the acts that are up there so far are Maroon 5, Kelly Clarkson, and One Republic. So I need some help. Help a brother out.
Help a brother out, everyone. You heard him. Here's the URL. There's the URL, everyone. For those who are listening, again, it's openingact.radio.com/2023/Chris-Saunders. And if you are actually looking to, if you can't remember all that, then you can go to Chris's IG and find the link there in his bio.
Yeah, I got posts. I got my bio. Follow me.
Get follow me. They calling me. I have nothing going on for the first time in quite a while. I have literally nothing going on.
You tend to say that, and then you have.
Actually, that's not true.
Yeah, here it comes. Uh-huh.
But I don't. I'm actually doing a friend of mine talked me into doing coming on there. They're kind of like coaches for like people in entertainment, and she talked me into coming on her class, our next online class, and doing like a Q&A kind of a thing. So it's actually really good, like a good seminar. It's a very good seminar. It's like I attended one just to see what it was like. She had a good turnout, good, all kinds of producers and directors and stuff. It was really cool. I'll have it posted to my Instagram later on today. If you want to check it out, stop by, check it out. I'm at the Darren Jenkins on Instagram.
I mean, your events and what's called events are usually pretty informative, great place to meet people and learn stuff. So I highly recommend people check this stuff out, man.
Yeah, we had a really good one. Oh, you should have. No, you should have came. It was we got this VFX AI company from Canada to come and talk about the use of AI in films, and that's a hot topic, obviously, for a lot of people right now. And you know, so if you've seen any of the new Marvel platform TV shows or movies, they've done most of them. So it was good. It was a good conversation. Everybody got to ask their questions and stuff. It was cool. So other than that, that's it. I have nothing. Watching TV.
Well, I'll fill in for Darren. Come check me out on September 12th, Tuesday, September 12th at 8:30 at Pete's Candy Store. And I just booked November 17th, 7 p.m. at the Delancey. Boom, bop, bop, bop. And then hopefully I'll be performing on October 14th at Prudential Center.
Yeah, that would be really cool. And you can, again, for any of this information, you can go up to his Instagram and follow him there, send him a DM, say hello. You know, come out, because the show, actually, Pete's Candy Store is actually pretty cool venue.
Yeah, I randomly came across I was trying to learn some covers and was thinking about Don't Start Now by Dua Lipa, and yep. Noticed on her music video and on YouTube that she shot part of the video at Pete's Candy Store. So,
oh yeah, that's right. Yep.
So me, Dua Lipa, like this.
Yeah, yeah.
Besties. I mean,
right there. When's your album? When's your duo album coming out?
Dua Saunders.
Dua Saunders, yeah.
Chris Lipa. I'll let you know. Keep posted.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I guess that wraps it up, huh? Mm-hmm. Cool. Another one in the books. We got some more coming up for you soon. I think not Trading Places. What was the one we're going?
I want to do Beverly Hills Cop.
Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah. I want to do Moana, Barbie. We got some stuff we want to do. So,
yeah, and you can always, if you have a film and that has a great track list, you can always suggest films or come on, you know, suggest a film and maybe we'll choose you to come on and be a guest. Be sure to follow us at the Tracklist Podcast on Instagram and on Facebook. And soon coming to Threads, as soon as we get around to doing that at some point down the road. But at the very least, come check us out on Instagram. We're always posting something interesting. So there's that.
Word.
All right. Well, another one in the books. And good suggestion.
Thank you. App Rocks or whatever it was.
Up Rocks, yeah. Yeah. Let's not use that list again.
Some of our movies we've done are on that list.
A lot of them
and Beverly Hills Cop is on that list. So, you know,
which means they're just listening to our podcast and doing that. That's all they're doing.
That'd be the smart thing to do. We are the experts.
Yeah. But if you want to know what movies to watch, you should be listening to our podcast. So there's that.
Thanks for listening, y'all.
Thanks, everybody. And again, make sure to follow us on the Tracklist Podcast and Instagram and Facebook. Till then, I'm Darren Jenkins.
I'm Chris Saunders.
This is the Tracklist. See you guys on the flip side.